At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi,
featuring former FBI special agent and chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis program, Robin Dreek.
Richard Allen's attorney submitting a 136-page filing just the other week, outlining what they believe happened to the girls. And it's quite a filing, 136 pages talking about how they were ritualistically sacrificed by members of a pagan Norse religion that had a white nationalist bent on it called Odinism. Essentially, white nationalists taking over this Odinism and turning it into some sort of a race-concerned religion. They also leveled accusations against lead detectives of ignoring or intentionally suppressing evidence for many years. It goes into quite detail on this filing. I don't know if you get a chance to see it or not. It is sealed, but we got a copy of it before it got sealed. And it's kind of shocking. And there does seem to be a lot of possible connections here. It's not just a three-page, hey, we think maybe there's a cult thing going on here. It goes into quite detail. What's your reaction to this response from the defense of Richard Allen?
Yeah, well, we just got done talking about cults and we'll keep it going. Yeah, yeah. This cult. This is a clear cult. It's sad. But I think it's exactly what's going on.
Do you think that there is something to this? Because it seems rather, I guess people don't think of people sacrificing other people. I certainly don't think it's that common. I could be completely wrong. But is there some legitimacy to these claims? I mean, Richard Allen has maintained his innocence the entire time, aside from admitting to his wife 5 times on one call that he killed the girls. They're arguing in the filing that it was under duress that some members of Odinism are actual guards at the prison which he's in, which is a whole other conversation. He's in a prison. He's not been found guilty yet. You'd think he'd be in a jail, but he's in a maximum security prison, saying that there's threats going on and that he's basically had to do that in order to, not be harmed himself.
I have a general rule of thumb when dealing with cases like this and situations like this, where the more complicated it becomes, that means there's a lot of crazy going on.
Yeah.
There's no simple answer to this one. I think because this one is so complex to try to understand, it's kind of like the Lori Daybell case. You know, the more complicated it takes, if you got to start breaking out a wire diagram to start trying to figure things out of who's connected to who, that's when we have a very big network of people that are doing things that are wrong. And I think that's exactly what's going on here. Likelihood of this being, a result of cult activities, well, all I can say is it's looking like it. Murdering people for this, that's not nearly as common, but it happens. You know, what people have done throughout history in the name of their religious beliefs is profound. And not in negative. And so in this day and age, having a Odinism religion that believes in ritual sacrifice, sure, it doesn't surprise me at all. It's sad, it's tragic, but the fact that what happened in this case, if it did, doesn't surprise me at all.
Well, we see a lot of people who openly say they are Odinists. They at least follow it like a club in some way, shape, or form. Maybe more of a cult if they're doing harmful things. But I don't believe there's a lot of evidence of them sacrificing people, if any evidence, in modern times and situations like this that could either mean, they just haven't been caught, or they're not really doing that sort of thing. I don't know how organized this group is either than just kind of a collective around the area, around the country. There's certain people who go, I identify more with Odinism than I do this or that. But within Odinism, there's not a lot of, sacrificing of people necessarily.
Yeah, I agree. It's again, the theme today is, the cults and which are offshoots of a religious belief system like LDS. Mm-hmm. Lori Daybell, was part of LDS and they took it to their extreme where she saw evilness in people that happen to also have life insurance policies that she could kill to get the life insurance policies. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's how she used her justification of their religion to do just that. So if Odinism is a widespread religion that people believe in, the likelihood of mass groups sacrificing people really slim to none. But are there going to be offshoots of that, which are rationalizing and justifying their actions because there's mental disorders going on? Yep.
Why do you think they revealed or put this out, this 136-page document, well before the trial itself? It almost kind of outlines the whole defense, if this is the area that they're going to go down. Is it in hopes that he could be exonerated before trial if they decide to look into this sort of thing? Or is it to get the public's mind kind of wrapped around this angle that they're going with? Because it does seem very extreme. So when it is argued in court, maybe people are a little more receptive to it.
Yeah, I'm on that side with you. Kind of, I'm always on the side of every time I see defense doing something, I'm always thinking that they're just trying to play juries. Mm-hmm. And I don't know this because I haven't looked at kind of cases like this, but I'm imagining it's very much like they would do during a gang trial. You know, so if you have a couple gang members that were under the threat of duress of being kicked out of the gang slash killed, if unless they performed this illegal act, that under duress, they had to do it for their survival. So then I think they might be going for an angle like that.
With there being, and they're not named as suspects from law enforcement, but if you were just to look at the clues that are out there, there is an individual that is an Odinite, and they were looking at him kind of closely, but then said he has nothing to do with this. But he had disturbing images on his social media that eerily mimicked the crime scene. Some of the way the sticks were laid out on the bodies and such were literally on his social media shortly after the murders took place. But despite those findings, they said he's cleared. But they went after this other guy who voluntarily raised his hand when they said, "Who's been out there hiking?" Richard Allen said, "Yeah, I was out there at this time and this and that," you know, putting himself at a crime scene voluntarily. It doesn't necessarily seem like that would be the MO of someone who ritualistically killed two kids or just killed two kids in general off by the railroad tracks.
Yeah, to your first point, what he has posted on social media that mimics what the crime scene looked like, well, a lot of religions have traditions and methodologies for doing things that, you know, trace back thousands of years. And so, you know, just because that showed up, and it's not a coincidence, but that's part of the religion, doesn't mean, again, it was definitely something for law enforcement to look at.
Yeah.
But definitely not a smoking gun on that one. Hey, and I always look at it like this. The more open and transparent someone is, it just goes well to their innocence, or at least to their truth and veracity. So who knows? But yeah, I find it at least good behavior that he's having to be open about what he's been doing.
It'd be very interesting to see where this goes. It's quite a defense, but yeah, I mean, we've seen I don't know. We've seen stranger things. I think Daybell may beat this a bit, but to go down this road with all of these claims in this document, it's quite overwhelming and somewhat fantastical. But I do wonder how much of it is legit and how much a jury will eat up or believe and accept as a possible fact here for his alibi, just considering the fantasticalness of the idea of it being a Norse cult.
You know, Tony, you hit the really key words in there, overwhelming and fantastical. So again, reverse the optic, put yourself in that jury, you know, seat, and do that thought experiment. So if you're sitting there listening to defense, giving all these details in this fantastical, yet in a way that they're going to make it make sense to them, you're going to start seeing that the subject that they're trying to prosecute is a smaller part of a larger whole. And so when you're sitting here imagining, you know, the person that they're defending, you know, the person on trial is just a small cog in a massive wheel, how likely are you to then say, oh, yeah, guilty?
Mm-hmm.
See what I mean? So that's what it really goes into here, I think, is that they're trying to paint this larger picture of this victim of a system that took advantage of him. And that sows seeds of doubt, and that bodes well for their client.
I would say after reading that document, it certainly, at the very least, creates quite a bit of reasonable doubt on Richard Allen's guilt.
What a legal system.
You're consuming the Hidden Killers podcast.
Want more? Start binging on all of our true crime podcasts right now through Apple Podcasts and get an ad-free experience when you sign up to be a True Crime Today Premium Plus member exclusively on Apple Podcasts.
More of the Hidden Killers podcast, dropping soon.
Press subscribe now.